From MainePublic.org, I'm Barbara Caridi, bringing you the news on this Election Day in Maine, Tuesday, November 8th, 2016. And on this day, voter turnout in Maine is extremely heavy in some places, and many voters, whatever their choices, say they're just glad this election is coming to an end. Money has been pouring into some Maine legislative races. We'll tell you which ones and why. And some news that's not about the election. Maine wildlife officials are revamping the rules on ownership of exotic pets. Those stories and more after this.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs, and Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, presenting Gardens Aglow, where visitors will see the gardens in a whole new light. Tickets available at mainegardens.org.
I'm Barbara Caridi. Secretary of State Matt Dunlap says voter turnout in Maine this year could set a record. Officials were projecting 65% to 67% turnout, and with nearly 250,000 absentee ballots processed already, Dunlap says clerks are doing a good job keeping up. Turnout has been reported as steady and in some cases extremely heavy with long lines. As Susan Sharon reports, voters have different reasons for wanting to be heard.
For first-time voter Melanda Wamalanda of Lewiston, participating in this election left him nothing short of ecstatic. He was snapping photos of himself even before he left his polling place. Outside, he said he had one candidate on his mind when he filled out his ballot.
Today, I vote for Hillary Clinton because I support women and I love them.
Originally from the Democratic Republic of Congo, Wamalanda says he loves Clinton's plan to make public university and college tuition-free. His friend, Faria Muhammad, also voted for Clinton. She says she couldn't support Donald Trump for a list of reasons.
Mostly it's the immigration, anti-immigration rant, anti-Muslim rant, anti-woman rant, everything about him I don't like. I would be very scared to have a president like him that hates people so much, with so much hate in him. I would be scared to live in a country like that.
But across the river in Auburn, Keith Smith said he was voting for one reason only. He doesn't want Hillary Clinton to win.
It's a really poor example for our up-and-coming people. All the, you know, lying and stuff is bad. That's really bad. I'm not saying that Donald Trump's the best person in the world, but Hillary's probably the worst.
In addition to the presidential contest, Maine voters had two congressional candidates and five ballot measures to consider, including taxing and regulating recreational marijuana, requiring a background check for most gun sales, and raising the minimum wage. Smith says he voted against all of them except one. He supports raising the minimum wage. He understands, he says, that people can't live on $7.50 an hour anymore. Jack Uminski of Falmouth says he voted against everything on the ballot. He says he resents deciding policy matters by referendum.
Well, you know, I don't like this idea of these things. I mean, you know, the people got to vote. The people got to, you know, got a voice. No, that's what we elect the legislators for. If we don't like our legislators, vote them out. Okay, this is how we got this gay marriage thing. Okay, I didn't agree with that, and all of a sudden now it's the law.
And then there's Janet Scala, also a Falmouth resident, who says she voted for all of the ballot measures.
The only one that I have questions about is question number one, with the marijuana, because I think we're sort of putting the cart before the horse, that we haven't figured out all the issues that may arise from that before we've said, let's try it.
But Scala says she ultimately decided to put her trust in the Maine legislature to work things out. Working things out is a big theme for voters on both sides of the aisle and of all backgrounds. Many people we spoke to said they're tired of the name-calling and the acrimony. They want to see their leaders figure out a way to work together, or, at the very least, says Wendell Case of Freeport, to show some restraint.
I hope the outcome, no matter who wins, is that we can figure out some kind of self-control and not be so divisive.
And there is one other thing upon which they all agree. They just want this election to be over. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Meanwhile, Secretary of State Matt Dunlap says he's heard of no reports of voter fraud, intimidation, or suppression, despite concerns raised by the Republican Party. The Maine GOP sent out a statement early today that mentioned, quote, a rapid increase in chatter related to potential election fraud. It complained about the state's lack of an identification requirement to vote, and Maine GOP political director Joe Turcotte encouraged Republicans to vote early so their names will be crossed off voting lists, eliminating the possibility of someone else voting in their name. Dunlap said he'd heard of no problems late this afternoon other than voting machine failures in Lincolnville, Mount Vernon, and Woolwich. Meanwhile, in southern Maine, the YMCA was offering free childcare to voters today. President Helen Brenya says it's part of the Y's to be socially responsible.
This is our way to do that, to help parents be able to have a safe place for their kids so they can go and exercise their right to vote, which is important for everybody to do.
The Southern Maine Y offered the free childcare at its four locations until 1 this afternoon and again from 4 until 8 p.m. Meanwhile, when it comes to election spending, the race in Maine's 2nd Congressional District, with more than $7 million in independent expenditures, has dominated the headlines, but a lot of money is also flowing into some state legislative races. Nora Flaherty talks with Mal Leary, who's been keeping track of the numbers.
Mal, you've been crunching numbers this afternoon. Tell me what your findings are on all this spending.
Well, Nora, like so many things in politics, it's really important to follow the money. That's how you find out which races are close or being targeted by the political parties. In this last week alone, that's just the last 7 days, nearly $500,000 in independent expenditures have been made to influence a relative handful of state Senate races. The money's paid for everything from traditional television ads, cable TV ads, radio ads, mailings, robocalls, and a lot of social media buying for races all across the state. And this, of course, is on top of the hundreds of thousands of dollars in independent expenditures that were made in October and even earlier in some of these races, and on top of the actual campaign committees of the individual candidates. So it's pretty clear from looking at the numbers today, we're looking at setting a record in terms of the amounts of money being spent to get elected to the Maine legislature.
So, obvious question, where is most of this money going?
Well, it's interesting. If you look at Aroostook County, who has two state Senate seats, and both of them appear to have been targeted for a lot of spending. For example, Governor LePage's ICE PAC, that's his personal political action committee, has spent about $13,000 in the last week in support of the Republican Ricky Long in the southern Aroostook County seat, and about the same amount against Democrat Michael Carpenter. And both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party and their various subcommittees, partisan PACs, have all spent money in that race. And in the northern part of the county, both parties, as well as other independent political action committees, have spent tens of thousands of dollars, both for and against Democrat Troy Jackson and Republican Tim Jurette. That's a lot of money in a county where cost of advertising, for example, is not a lot.
Yeah, that is a lot of money in Aroostook County. What are some of the other races that have been targeted that people should watch for as the votes come in?
There are several. For example, the Somerset County seat with Republican Rod Whittemore and Democrat Jeff McCabe. Party PACs, union groups have all spent heavily in that race, both supporting and opposing the two candidates. They've also targeted the Western Maine Senate seat, where Democrat John Patrick is facing Republican Lisa Keim. And there's been significant spending in the Mid-Coast Senate seat, where Democrat Chris Johnson faces Republican Dana Dow. And probably the most high-profile race, Nora, has been in Waldo County, where Senate President Mike Thibodeau, he's a Republican, has a rematch against Democrat Jonathan Fulford, and there's been tens of thousands spent in that race.
Okay, so some of these races have been considered close for a while, but have there been any bursts of last-minute spending that you were surprised to find out about?
Yeah, some of them really surprised me. For example, the Hancock County State Senate seat, where Republican Brian Langley is the incumbent. He's facing Republican Maura O'Neill. Langley has run pretty comfortably in the past, but in the last week alone, the last 7 days, groups like the Maine People's Alliance and the Maine Democratic Party have spent over $75,000 supporting O'Neill. That surprises me. That's one of those seats you would expect would be safe Republican, but the Democrats in this case seem to think that they've got a shot at knocking off an incumbent that's been there for a while.
Okay, so drum roll, any predictions in these races?
I learned a long time ago not to predict in these races, Nora. Money does not always dictate how a race will go. So even with all of this money that's being spent, we're going to see that in some of these contests that come out tonight, there'll be an awful lot of money spent for not very many votes and a lot of people upset. But following the money is always a good indication of where the parties and the political action committees think the contests are.
Okay, thanks, Mel.
Thank you, Nora.
And that was Mal Leary talking with Nora Flaherty. Coming up, keeping exotic pets. Maine wildlife officials reconsider the rules. Is a hedgehog at the top of your holiday list? Or maybe you're hoping to pull a python out of your Christmas stocking this year. Before you go and write to Santa, you might want to know that the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife is revamping the rules on what kind of animals Mainers can keep. Some exotic animal owners say IF&W has a bad attitude about such animals, but advocates of the rule change, including the state, say there's too much at stake to get it wrong. Jennifer Mitchell has more.
The ballroom at this South Portland hotel is abuzz with excitement. People of all ages are peering into lit glass enclosures and reaching out to pet big velvety snakes and colored lizards resting on rocks.
They're called cave dwellers because they hang out in the open.
It's the 2016 Reptile Expo, where enthusiasts of all things exotic and scaly come together. But this year, the event's major sponsor, the Maine Herpetological Society, is worried that changing regulations will hurt the hobby and those who make a living from it. The new, more complex rules would create four classifications of animals and set minimum qualifications needed for those who wish to keep an animal listed in a particular class.
It doesn't really make sense to me why they went that route.
Rob Christian, who heads the Maine Herpetological Society, says the old system was at least simple and clear. There was one list of animals that anyone could obtain. Anything not on that list required special permission from the state. But even under that system, Christian says IF&W has been too restrictive for those who want to keep an animal that's not on the so-called white list. Christian says he's applied for permits for more than 20 different species of animals, including pets common in other states, such as geckos and tarantulas.
And they deny me permits for everything. Like, everything I applied for, they denied them.
Was a reason given for the denial of the permits?
No.
Currently, Maine is the only state in the nation that prohibits tarantulas. Going forward, the department will have to supply a reason for denying a permit application. That won't necessarily help others whose living depends on keeping restricted species. Jason Perillo's business manufactures terraria and habitats for reptiles for a number of zoos across the country.
Right now, a lot of my zoos are working with vipers. Mostly arboreal tree vipers and then lowland species of Vipera and pseudo-Vipera. And for us, we actually have to work on a better locking mechanism and shift mechanism so that they can put the animals inside the enclosure and then also shift them sideways so that the keeper is completely isolated from the animal. We're not able to actually bring in any of those species.
Perillo says that means the enclosure cannot be tested because each system must be designed for the exact species that will inhabit it. He says IF&W has been unwilling to work with him to grant any kind of variance so he can keep the necessary snakes to do the work. He says if things don't change, he'll need to move his business to another more permissive state. And others say the department has and continues to go too far. One of them is researcher Ian Bricknell with the University of Maine School of Marine Sciences.
We have examples where we wanted to work with fish like koi carp. We had a $300,000 co-sponsored industry grant. We couldn't get a permit from Inland Fish and Wildlife until 2 days before the sponsoring body wanted to revoke that grant and take it off us. And only then, with a special appeal, did we actually get a very limited permit.
Bricknell says the process has seemed at times arbitrary and unscientific and will become even more onerous for academic researchers under the new system. Certain important species of frog and fish commonly used in research, he says, would be prohibited under the proposed rules. But from the state's perspective, many of these restricted creatures pose significant threats to native wildlife from invasive species and from diseases that could be unleashed on native wildlife.
Despite the best efforts of the people that may own those animals, in some cases they have been able to escape in the past. And we need to consider that possibility and be aware of what the implications of an event like that may be.
And Nate Webb, a wildlife biologist with IF&W who's been involved with drafting the new rules, says the public also has to be protected.
Certainly in the past, we have denied permits in situations where issuing that permit would not have been, in our view, in the best interests of Maine people and Maine's wildlife. And that certainly can be upsetting to somebody that wants to import or possess one of those species.
All of this comes just as, over the border in New Brunswick, a man is facing criminal charges after his African rock python killed two young children who were sleeping over at his home. The children were bitten repeatedly and smothered as they slept. Webb says the state has a duty to do all it can to prevent tragedies like those. But Rob Christian with the Herpetological Society says it's important to put the real threats into perspective.
Maine just passed last year a constitutional carry law. You can carry a firearm without a permit, but you're going to tell me I can't have a gecko?
And he says people are far more likely to be bitten and maybe killed by the family dog than by a properly handled snake. But he says it's also a matter of liberty.
This is America, land of the free, home of the brave. Why should they be restricting what pet I can have?
I just absolutely disagree with that type of a statement because, that is such a selfish attitude.
Katie Hansberry from Humane Society of the United States says the new laws don't go far enough in some ways, but they are a step in the right direction. Owning a boa constrictor, she says, is not a constitutional right.
We have to be taking both the public safety aspect and the animal welfare concerns into consideration.
There's a lot of work yet to be done on the regulations. A committee is set to meet in the coming days to work on the classification lists and debate over which animals should be on which list. A final rule isn't expected until early 2017, and it still needs to clear another round of public hearing.
They're not like a cat and dog. You don't get it like
one thing on which both sides agree, and for which neither has a solution, is that whatever rules are adopted will be a challenge to enforce. After all, a king cobra is just a mouse click away. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
And in other news, the Maine Fire Marshal's Office says no working smoke detectors were found in an Old Town home where a woman and two children died in a fire. Firefighters were called to the home around 10:15 yesterday. Crews arrived and learned that people were trapped inside the home. Firefighters removed a boy and girl from an upstairs bedroom, but the children could not be resuscitated. A woman's body was found in a first-floor bedroom. The names of the victims have not been released. Autopsies are planned, and the cause of the fire is under investigation. Meanwhile, a 42-year-old Rockland man is facing arson and aggravated attempted murder charges after allegedly setting fire to a neighbor's mobile home. Officials say Timothy Barbeau was tackled at the fire scene by a neighbor who held him until Rockland police arrived. The state fire marshal's office says three people were asleep in the home at the time of the fire, which was reported about 7 o'clock this morning. No one was injured. Investigators say gasoline was used to start the fire, which caused minor damage to the mobile home. And finally, here's meteorologist Paul Cousins with the forecast.
Hands down, this was a winner of a fall day here in Maine. And it will be tranquil this evening with clear skies, the three-quarter moon rising, overcast thickening up late tonight, temperatures drop into the 30s throughout the state. A moisture-starved cool front will glide through Maine tomorrow. The canopy of clouds will be extensive, yet showers will be light and few and far between. Late in the day, accumulating snow showers are likely over the mountains. Temperatures tomorrow will reach the low 40s north to mid-50s throughout Cumberland and York County with a freshening northwest breeze late in the afternoon. Thursday will be dry statewide and windy. Overcast north, considerable cloudiness western, central, downeast Maine, with snow showers at night. Look for more sun than clouds. Booth Bay, Fryeburg south. Highs near 40 north of mountains to the low 50s along the coast, Portland south. Friday, snow showers will be widespread throughout northern and western Maine. Mountain accumulations likely. Look for considerable cloudiness throughout the remainder of the state, brightest south of Portland, 40 to 52 north to south, and very blustery. We'll be back at the Pink Saturday, breezy and bright for all. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for Maine Public.
And that's the news on this Election Day in Maine, Tuesday, November 8th, 2016. Robert Holt composed our theme music. Thanks to our news leaders, Keith Shortall, Susan Sharon, and Andrew Catalina, and to our entire news team for their contributions. You can keep up to date with election results on all our platforms, Maine Public Radio, television, and, of course, online at mainepublic.org. I'm Barbara Caridi. For all of us here at Maine Public, thanks for listening.